Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. It's Friday.
Mira, mami, ven acá aquí. Come over here and dance with me. I see your body look so heavenly. Baby girl, you're delicious to me. Bala pa favor, part of me. I'm the type that's right and my game is tight. And I see, baby girl, you're looking all right. So what you got, a man, we ain't here tonight. Your body.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. This is Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I am Tay, Eric Taylor, and it's a beautiful, beautiful Friday, hyped up, and let's get ready to rock and roll, man. You want to join us? Give us a ring, 718-664-9098. Check out rayandtaytoday.com. Listen to old shows, polls, standings, mock drafts, everything. Email us, and we'll get to some emails today, we promise, at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com, and we truly thank you for sending in your emails. Twitter, hit us up, Ray and Tay Today at Twitter, also at Facebook, like our Facebook page, the Twitter page, interactive, we tweet with everybody, so it's lots of fun. And hey, man, well, listen, we got a good show. Ray will break it down for you. And just a quick note, Ray, I just wanted, you know, to send our condolences to all those that, you know, just even recently with this whole Boston Marathon saga unraveling, to the police officer. And turns out Sean Collier, his brother, is involved in NASCAR. And it's just such a sad situation. So we just hope that the one young man that's still alive is brought to justice, and our prayers go out to everybody up in Boston still. So Ray,
yeah, we
let them know.
We
man.
Really don't. Yeah, we really don't want to get into it too much. But also,
yeah.
You know, from a sports perspective, also they canceled the games up there in Boston because
yes.
The city's on lockdown. Yeah. So there's no Bruins and
yeah.
There's no Red Sox games, which
no,
is
Red Sox,
you know, obviously
exactly.
What you have to do. But we hope this thing gets resolved safely and peacefully very, very soon. So for all of our Boston fans out there and for everybody with Boston in your heart, Ray and Tay are with you, and we hope this thing gets resolved peacefully. So back to the world of sports, to give you a little break from what's going on in Boston, we will do our normal breaking news segment where we'll talk about news and happenings in the world of sports. We've got a lot of little things going on in the world of the NBA and the NFL, Major League Baseball. We will go down and break down the NFL schedule for this upcoming 2013 season.
Here we go.
Interesting things happening going on. Starting in week one and this whole drama with the Ravens. We'll get into that. We'll talk about the Ray and Tay Award. So before the season, Ray and Tay told you who we thought would be MVP, Rookie of the Year, Sixth Man. We'll go in through those. We'll talk about Coach of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player. Then we'll finish this episode with an NBA playoffs preview. We'll talk about this first round. We'll talk about the next round, the conference championships, and even give you predictions for our NBA Finals champ. So, without further ado, let's kick it off. Let's talk about what's happening in the world of sports.
Man, the world of sports is exciting. Well, first off the bat, you know, just looking at the NFL and a couple of different things, this doesn't matter to me, but I just want to talk about it real quick. Tavon Austin, which, you know, I know his uncle through a friend of a friend at Maryland, he scored really low on the Wonderlic, got a 7. I just don't care. He's going to be a first round and the first receiver probably taken. And I just think all this stuff gets overly hyped and even reported. I don't know why they report it, maybe to embarrass kids. If you don't release all the scores, right, like the steroid stuff, if you don't release everybody's name, don't release anybody's score or say anything about a kid. It's just unfortunate to me. And I think what's interesting,
what do you think about James Harrison going to the Bengals?
Yeah, well, you talk about breaking news. He just said it on Twitter not too long ago. Cincinnati, here I come. So, you know, James Harrison, 35-year-old linebacker for the Steelers no longer and is now with our rivals, the Cincinnati Bengals. I think that's interesting. Your boy Sanchez is blaming the Jets and accusing them for doing the whole, you know, TiVo thing and so to have ESPN be there and just the whole evasion. I just think Sanchez has got to get over it because if you're about playing your game and you are a stud quarterback, ESPN and TiVo wouldn't matter. Okay, so that's just, you know,
right, it's not
ridiculous.
Like he didn't take every snap until he was essentially benched at the end of the year. It's not like he didn't have every opportunity to lead that team and succeed. Now, if he's not mentally strong enough to deal with the media in New York, well, that might be another issue. But the fact still remains whether this guy's a starting quarterback in the NFL. I mean, is he a top 32 quarterback in the NFL? You know, that's still TBD. So, yeah, he doesn't
have any.
I hope
he's not the quarterback of our Jets. Let's go David Garrard, but that's, a whole other thing. Now, over to the NBA. Listen, Doug Collins, he resigns for the Sixers. Then you got
the firings. He said he was ready to go since December.
Yeah, well, listen, you could understand, right, what happened and the trade and the injuries. He's worn out. 3 years and he's done. That's okay. They're looking at, you know, a couple of different guys and, you know, maybe even former player Michael Curry, which would be kind of interesting. But Cleveland fires our boy Byron Scott. Then Detroit, you know, they don't want to give the option to Lawrence Frank, and he wanted to get the option, and they were like, no, and you're gone. So Lawrence Frank's fired. So we have three jobs open in the NBA. We'll see how it all plays out, and potentially Mike Brown might return to Cleveland. I personally don't like it. I don't know what you think about it. But, you know, I don't have a problem with it, actually,
because, look,
really?
The reason why he had to go was just, you know, LeBron went and they wanted to keep LeBron and keep, you know, give it a chance.
I just don't think he's a head coach, right?
I don't think he's that good either, but who are they choosing between? I mean, who's better than
Mike
Brown
right
now?
There's tons of guys out there. You got to give
some
young
blood.
I think Mike
Brown's a solid coach, actually. I think he was a misfit for the Lakers, and I don't know how well he's a defensive guy.
Been there, done that.
Okay.
Been there, done that. Why don't we give Brian Shaw? Why don't we give Brian Shaw a chance?
Well, look, Brian Shaw, for some reason, didn't get that Laker job, which was interesting to me. And then they couldn't pull him out mid-season. But, yeah, Brian Shaw deserves to be an NBA head coach. So I would definitely look at Brian Shaw.
Yeah. So Kelly Olynyk is leaving Gonzaga. We thought he would, going to the NBA. Joakim Noah, looks like, for the Chicago Bulls, will probably miss the first-round matchup against the Brooklyn Nets. So that can change some predictions and some things right there.
Well, back to the college kids. Hold on. We still got Glenn Robinson III, McGarry, and Harris, also three stars in the Big Ten, coming back next year, which is interesting. So, you know, Michigan and Michigan State both look like they'll be real solid, even though they have some, you know, people leaving. So, you know, Adrian Payne and Appling will be leaving for Michigan State, and obviously Burke and Hardaway are leaving for Michigan. But with those three coming back to Michigan and Michigan State, they'll be fine. It should be interesting to see. Also, we said Eddie Jordan going to Rutgers.
Yeah.
So they're finally going to get themselves an NBA coach who was a former Rutgers player, I think 73-77. So that's a good thing from them.
Very good coach too. I like Eddie Jordan. Also, the Maloof, they're asking the NBA, you know, to approve the sale to the Seattle Group. So stay tuned with that. I mean, we're sort of still in limbo with that whole situation that we thought would have already been, you know, taken care of, but it's not. And then Brandon Jennings will be around for the first round against the Miami Heat. So that sort of wraps that up. But what's going on in baseball real quick, Matt Ray?
Right. Well, one more thing. O.J. Mayo apparently is going to opt out of his contract and not come back to Dallas next year and be a free agent again this summer. And we'll see how that works out for him. In baseball, We've got Jeter out until after the All-Star break. It looks like he has another minor break in his ankle. So that coming back by the end of spring training was way overly optimistic. And when he comes back, now there's doubts if he can play shortstop again. You know, that's a middle infield position. You need ultimate dexterity and flexibility. The problem is on this Yankee team, there's too many, you know, left field DH types that I don't know where they put Jeter, right? We've got Travis
Hafner. Well, he doesn't hit good enough to be a DH.
Well, right. So that's going to be a problem. And then in Texas, the opening day pitcher, Matt Harrison, has back surgery, and he's probably out a few months. So that's not good news for all those Ranger fans, the two-time defending AL champs, or before last year, before when the Tigers made it. So in 2011, 2010.
Wow. And you know what? Our boy Teixeira, he's starting to swing the bat in the pool doing his exercises.
Yeah,
so,
Ortiz is almost back. And
oh, big
Poppy. Should be back. Yeah.
Well, that's good, man. You know, it's a long season, but you hope these guys come back. Hopefully, you know, Granison will be back in a bit. And, you know, you just want teams to be at their best. You know, we all want health, just like, you know, for the NBA teams, for the NBA playoffs. You just want guys to be healthy, man. So stay tuned for all of that. So listen, let's get into it. Let's talk the NFL 2013 schedule. I don't know about you. I am so hyped for football. I am so excited. The schedule, when it gets released, I get hyped up about it. I love it, personally. And
the magic of football, right? All they're telling you is who's playing whom.
Well, no, you already knew who's playing whom. They're just telling you the date.
No, but you know which weeks.
Yeah.
And you know who's home, who's away. And you know which games are on Sunday and Monday, which are the national TV games.
And Thursday.
So they fill in a little bit of the details.
Right. I'm just saying, before that, the only thing you know is who's playing who at home and a road. Now you've got all the details. And, you know, for us passionate football, Cowboy and Steeler fans that we are, it's exciting. It's exciting. And, you know, I guess it's a little rough, right? The division champs, because of the baseball situation, they couldn't work it out. They have to open up on the road. And they're going to Denver. You know, Thursday, September 5th, they will be at the Denver Broncos. So that should be kind of interesting. I don't know what you think about the whole situation with, you know, the champs having to go on the road. You know, it's been a tradition for the last, since 08,
nine,
I believe.
I think it's 9 years, something like that.
Yeah, it's been a while that the defending champs played.
I wonder if that's baseball flexing a little bit and saying, you know, football has prime time all year or every month that they're in season. And so baseball's saying, don't forget about us. We're still America's pastime, at least they call themselves that. And they don't want to get steamrolled by the NFL because the NFL steamrolls everything and everyone in its way. So baseball might just be pushing back and saying, whoa, slow your roll a little bit. But, you know, they open on the road. Who cares? I mean, at the end of the day, you still got to play 16 games, 8 at home, 8 on the road. This notion of opening on the road and being the highlighted game on Thursday is really just a new phenomenon. So let's not make it out to be the Thanksgiving Day tradition that's been going on for 40 years. You know, it's a tradition that the NFL in their brilliance and their marketing genius came up with, but it's not that big a deal. So it's fine. I think people got worked up a little bit about that. It's fine. So they'll go on the
just
road. It's all right.
Yeah. I got to say, just to let the listeners know, there's some technical difficulties with the website, and it looks like the show's ending in 30 seconds, and that doesn't make sense. So we will still be on the air, but I don't know what's going on or what happened. I think Blog Talk is definitely having some issues. Kind of weird to me. But I just wanted to throw that out there. So, you know, to me, this NFL schedule is going to be juicy. You've got five teams that are going to have the maximum five primetime games, and then you got seven teams that only play once. Or, yeah, so I think that's kind of, no, seven teams that play five times and then six teams that only play once. And so, like, Jacksonville, Cleveland, Arizona, Tennessee, KC, Buffalo, you know, they only get one time to shine, man. So, you know, and this year everybody plays at least once on Thursday night. So, you know, with the thing, and they did that again last season. So I think that works in terms of teams having bye weeks and time off. You know, some people think that the Giants – you know, have a little disadvantage because the Cowboys, when they play them first time there, they go to Dallas, and then when they play them the second time, the Cowboys are coming off a bye week. So they get a little rest before they play a division rival, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's the interesting nuances of scheduling, especially with these Thursday games. So if you get the short week, you're screwed because you have a four days between games, and if you have the longer week, you have 10 days between games. It's just a bounce of the ball. So I don't get too worked up about that. But let's get into some of these interesting matchups. I mean, I think in week one, we talked a little bit about Baltimore going to Denver as the Thursday game, right? But what about this game, Green Bay at San Francisco? So it was the opposite. It was San Francisco at Green Bay last year, first game of the season, and Green Bay got smacked up. So my prediction to win it all last year, Green Bay, you certainly saw they got brought back to reality real quick when the Niners, led by Alex Smith, went in there and slapped them up. So they have a little revenge on their mind, and they want to prove that they're an elite team again. So that should be very interesting.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a good one. I like a bunch of the matchups. I mean, obviously, Giants and Cowboys. You know what's interesting? Monday night, you got, you know, the Eagles and Redskins, RG3's hopeful return to, you know, playing. If he doesn't miss, you know, he probably will miss all the preseason. And then the Texans at Chargers, doubleheader. So usually they have an AFC West game, but this time they're going, you know, Texans at Chargers. So that's kind of different. And, it's going to be so exciting, you know. I mean, you got some juicy, you know, matchups. For me, my Steelers open up at home against Tennessee, so I'm definitely excited about that. And, you know, and away you go, the Jets host Tampa. Now, how interesting is that, right? If Darrell
Revis,
week one, is coming back to MetLife Stadium as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. Can you only imagine?
Well, they got to do that deal already if they're going to do it. But we'll see. I mean, that's interesting. There's also, as you move on down the schedule, who'd you say had the hardest and who did you say had the easiest? Or the
so
Giants
mathematically, it's
schedule?
No big deal, right? It's just by the numbers. But they say that just by teams' records of last year, the Lions have the most difficult schedule and the Denver Broncos have the easiest schedule.
Oh, the Lions and the Broncos. Okay.
Yeah. I think, like, the Raiders had the fourth easiest. You know, just a couple different, you know, whatever. So, actually, you know what's so funny? I got an email here. We said we get to some emails. I got a football email here, and it's fitting that, you know, we're looking at the Monday night games of week one. And the email says, this is Scott from Arizona, and we know Scott. He's a big Eagle fan. He said, listen, since 2009, whoever opens up first at Philadelphia, you know, the first Philly home game will win the NFL Super Bowl. And it's just one of those weird anomalies. And, it, you know, so he goes, so let's go Superchargers San Diego, ha, ha, ha. And so there you go, right? It was New Orleans in 2009. Then the Giants, Packers, and then the Ravens. So this year, in week two, because the Eagles open up at the Redskins week one, so their first home game, lo and behold, they play the San Diego Chargers. So maybe some people at Vegas maybe should lay some money down, Ray, on the San Diego Chargers. I can't believe that's such a crazy stat. And
let me understand this. The last 4 years, the person who won in Philadelphia.
Who played against the Eagles.
Oh,
their
not
home opener.
Won. I don't know if Philly won.
No, it's just the home opener. The Eagles' home
Whoever
opener.
Whoever was the Philadelphia Eagles' opponent in their home opener went on to win the Super Bowl.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, boy. Okay.
So, thanks, Scott, for the email and the tidbit. I saw that also at ESPN today, but Scott's been telling me that for a while. He's like, watch when the schedule releases. So that's kind of funny, man. Wow. Well, listen, Philip Rivers should be excited about that, right?
Yeah, but I wouldn't go out and put your money on it. If you're in Vegas right now, put your money back in your pocket. Don't go up to the betting counter and bet on the San Diego Superchargers to win the Super Bowl.
No, definitely not.
Save
your
money,
I'll tell you one thing.
Go out for a nice meal, and save your money.
I'll tell you two games that I'm looking forward to on week two, right? The Sunday night Niners at the Seahawks is going to be awesome. And then the Monday night sort of revenge to see the Steelers at Cincinnati with Harrison going up against his old team, the Steelers. Those should be pretty fun. Those should be pretty
Harrison
fun games. Oh, man. It should be nice. And then, you know, also week two, the highlight is Denver at the Giants. You know, the brothers, man. Eli
and
Peyton.
Yeah, they're starting the byes in week four with Green Bay and Carolina. And then they obviously.
Right, and aren't they going
that.
4-12 this year, right?
Yeah, they're going and then two in week four, and then they go 4-4, and then up until. Well, no, actually, they. I'm looking at the schedule now. They actually do a little. They run the okey-doke on us. So in week four, and for all you fantasy guys, you got to keep this in mind, in week four there's two teams on bye. In week five there's four. In week six there's two again, Atlanta and Miami. And then in week seven there's two. And then in week eight there's six. And then in week nine there's six. And then in week 10 there's four. And then in week 11 there's two. And in week 12, there's four, and in week, and that's it. So
yeah,
they're going 4-12, and it goes 2-4 or 6. That's actually going to be hard to. That's going to be hard to remember when you're on, when you're doing your fantasy teams.
Right, especially for the draft, you'll have to have a printout copy right there, you know, with you to sort of break it down. That's. A little bit crazy, right? A little bit weird, but hey, it happens. It definitely happens. You know what's interesting for me? You know, I always love Week 17, again, all the division games. I find, you know, that exciting, you know, because you can't really rest your guys Week 17 if you're going up against a divisional opponent. You know, so I think that's something, you know, to look forward to for those battles in the trenches. I got to tell you right now, and we didn't mention this, but the owner of Cleveland is having some issues with his, you know, company and his business. And I wonder if that's going to affect the Cleveland Browns with the draft or their team or the franchise if he's, you know, forced to sell. We'll have to stay tuned and see how that is.
I don't think so. Yeah. You know, when it's an owner – You know, it's funny because you think the owner's the most important guy. Well, maybe in acquiring the team and putting the financing together.
Right.
And then
he just bought them, right? You know, so that's
right.
What's so interesting.
$1 billion for the Cleveland Browns.
I know.
Oof. But yeah, it's not a good look.
Franchise.
Yeah, it's not a good look though when the FBI is looking at your company and you're under investigation, or your company is anyway. So, but I don't think so. It's different with what happened, let's say, to the New Orleans Saints. If you take away the head coach or the GM, they have more of an impact on the day-to-day success of the team in the short run. Now, maybe in the long run, the owner sets the stage, you know, what do we do with the facilities? How are we with the salary cap? Are we willing to go, you know, extend and pay money to get big free agents? Are we ready to take financial risk? That sort of thing. But I think in the short run, it's fine. I think the Browns are, you know, hopefully a team on the rise. We liked what we saw from them at times last year. They got to get that quarterback situation settled, but Trent Richardson is certainly a horse. They've got a high draft pick. Maybe they pick up another cornerback. Maybe they pick up Dee Milner in the first round. So, you know, I think the Browns are okay. I think they're doing all right. Hopefully they'll stabilize the situation. And the problem is that AFC North is tough. You know, so they're
tough.
Always going to be competing with Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and now the up-and-coming and pretty young Cincinnati Bengals. So it's hard to imagine that Brown team will be anything but fourth place, you know, for the foreseeable future.
It's sort of like the NFC West. I mean, with those top-heavy, and then the Cardinals and Rams are sort of battling for third, but. You know, when you've got multiple teams in your division that look like they're like locks for the playoffs, it's a hard climb. And, you know, I was mentioning the teams with the one primetime game, and, you know, Cleveland, Jacksonville, Arizona, Tennessee, KC, and Buffalo, you would think that Cleveland and KC are probably the teams on the rise, you know, and potentially Arizona if Carson Palmer works out, you know. That's the one thing you got to really see. Can Carson sort of be, you know, what Kurt Warner was years ago? Can he sort of be the old veteran that's crafty and, you know, lead you to the promised land? I don't know what you think about Arizona.
He's had one or two good seasons since 2005 when he had his knee torn up in that playoff game against your Steelers. So I don't expect much of Carson Palmer. I think he's riding. He's at the back end of his career, and he's riding his you know, status in the early 2000s as being you know, an up and coming borderline elite quarterback in the NFL. But he hasn't been much of a factor in terms of that top tier quarterback or even second tier quarterback, frankly, in 5 or 6 years. The year that they had some success in Cincinnati, they ran the ball, and he was basically a game manager. You know, he had Ocho Cinco and he had Houshmandzadeh and he had some talent up there, and then, you know, he played a little bit with T.O., but ultimately it's when Cedric Benson and that running game was established and the defense that he succeeded. So he hasn't been the Carson Palmer of 2004-2005 in many years, and I don't expect much out of him, and I don't expect much out of the Arizona Cardinals offense.
Yeah. No, I can hear you now. You know what's an interesting game to me and a nice little matchup? Got to see what week this is. But how about watching the Seahawks at the Texans? That right there seems like a nice little game coming up on September 29th. That right there, Seahawks at Texans. Because, you know, you want to see how Seattle can travel on the road. You know, at home, they could wind up being 8-0 again. But on the road, going to, you know, an AFC powerhouse, and, you know, you got the savvy Ed Reed against the rookie quarterback. That safety could pick you off, Ray, and take you to the house. That's going to be
fun. Well,
he's
not a rookie anymore.
I know.
He's not a rookie anymore. He's a veteran.
I want to see this class. This sophomore class, how they, you know, handle the sort of all the success, right? You know, how they sort of transfer and just see how their games improve.
You know who I want to see? I feel like the top three are fine, and they just have to, you know, do their thing. I want to see
Ryan Tannehill.
I'm not sure about Brandon Whedon. He might not be starting in Cleveland by the end of the year, but I want to see Ryan Tannehill and what strides he makes, because remember, he's a converted receiver. I mean, this guy's been playing quarterback, you know, only for the past, at least at the college and pro level, only for the past 3-4 years. So he's just getting, you know, all that wetness behind his ears dried up. So this guy is got a lot of potential. You know, he's got as much potential as those other quarterbacks that we talk about, the young elite quarterbacks like a Russell Wilson. And, you know, even a Kaepernick. I mean, he's different. His game is different, but he's, you know, strong arm, shows flashes of brilliance, little inconsistent, certainly had a bad, you know, first two, three games of the season. But as the season wore on, people in Miami were saying that this guy at times showed really, really brilliant flashes of football. So I want to see Tannehill. But back to that game, though, the thing about those two teams is they are those huffing and puffing, like the Little Red Riding Hood. They are teams that really need to establish themselves. I mean, the time is now for both of those teams, right? At a certain point, the Houston Texans can't keep saying, we're there, we're there, we're at the doorstep, we're ready. I mean, at a certain point, you either punch the door down or you don't. And they've got to decide if this is their team and this is their squad, and specifically Matt Schaub, who, you know, I still think they can win with him, but his star has fallen a little bit the last couple years. And on the conversely, Seattle, you know, they've got to get through a couple teams in the NFC, right? They've got to get through Atlanta and San Francisco and Green Bay. So they've got to prove that they're an elite team. So Houston has Denver and the Patriots and, you know, whoever in the AFC North, the Steelers, the Ravens, but we both don't think the Ravens will be that great. But these two squads are squads that are in that.
I don't know about that anymore. The Ravens might be a little bit better than we thought earlier. I think some of the moves that
like
they've made. Dumerville, I like Dumerville a lot. Michael Huff, I don't think the Ravens will be that bad. They do need another receiver. Now, they might do that in the first round. Maybe they get lucky and get Patterson kid. I think that's going to be interesting. Now, real quick, I mean, we need to get to our Ray and Tay Awards, but one thing, it's not the end of the season, but just a couple games that I noticed in, I don't know what week this is, but Sunday, October 13th, you have Green Bay at Baltimore. That's going to be fun. And my Steelers, traveling to the New York Jets. That's going to be fun. You know, and for some people who like star power, Carolina Panthers, Cam Newton at AP, at Adrian Peterson. Some people call him AD. Some people call him AP. I call him Adrian Peterson. Cam Newton and the Panthers go to the Minnesota Vikings. So that looks like just a fun NFL weekend where you're like, you got to have the red zone because, you know, the scoreboard's going to be, you know, blinging all over. And you're going to be like, oh, my God, I got to watch all these games, you know. So,
And to top it off,
Saints at Patriots, by the way. That's a great weekend.
Yeah, look, there's a few of these super weekends, and then Manning going back to Indianapolis, that should be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, his brother, playing his brother, so that should be cool too. So, a lot of great football, but I think it's time. I think it's time to talk about the Ray and Tay Awards. NBA season is officially over.
It was a great season. It was a great season. You know, we had so many interesting things. The Heat's 27-game win streak, the Knicks streak. Clippers in Memphis had some nice winning streaks. You had, you know, the emergence of the old veteran Kobe, the Lakers drama and dysfunction all year. And now we, you know, and some huge injuries and players not coming back like Rose and Rondo going down. And now we come full circle and we're back to the battle for the Larry O'Brien Trophy. And we're back to the playoffs and the excitement. And we came up with our Ray and Tay NBA Awards. I think some of them, you know, we agree 100%, and the ones we don't, we'll kind of mention. But NBA MVP, it's LeBron James. I mean, what else can you say? I think we all know that. You know, he could easily be.
Let me just give you his stats.
Break down his stats.
Just tease the fans. 26.8 points per game, 8 rebounds per game, 7.3 assists per game.
That's
on
incredible.
A team with the best record that won 66 games. I mean, so if that's not an MVP season, then I don't know what is. But I will say that to their defense, two guys. So Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Team won 60 games, and Carmelo's team won 54 games. Any other season, they have very, very strong cases for MVP. So
along with Chris Paul?
Maybe. But he would certainly be fourth, especially because of the games that he missed. But
yeah.
unbelievable seasons, and you could throw Chris Paul in there, unbelievable seasons, but they were just blown away by LeBron. So it's unfortunate that in a year where you have such a great season, especially with Durant and Carmelo, LeBron just pulls away at about December, January. LeBron just put it in fifth gear and just ran away with it.
Yeah, I mean, that run that he went on during their win streak of, you know, his field goal percentage and scoring 30 points, shooting over 60%, you know, that's a legendary run. And I just hope the fans, I think it's calmed down. People don't hate on him as much as they used to. But I hope the fans sort of enjoy it, because like Jordan, you know, every career comes to an end, and we see, like, you know, Kobe's towards the end. Greatness is something that you need to appreciate sometimes, even if you're not per se a Miami Heat fan. Even if you only like one team, or you only follow the, you know, the Timberwolves, or you only like Sacramento Kings, or whatever it is, whatever your situation is as a fan or just a sports fan, you have to appreciate, respect, and recognize greatness. And
recognize.
You know, just imagine. Yeah, recognize. But just imagine if D. Rose didn't win the MVP, you know, LeBron would have, what, this would be his fourth in a row?
So check this out. I'm going to give you a number. LeBron has been in the league for 10 years. This just dawned on me right now. LeBron has been in the league. This will be his 10th season. He's just completed his 10th season. He came in that phenomenal draft with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Carmelo and Darko Milicic. So
don't forget about Darko.
He will have won, if he wins this, his fourth MVP in his 10th season. So 40% of the seasons that the guy plays, he's the MVP. And take his first two seasons out because, right, he's a 19-year-old kid and whatever. So really, when he matured into his game, the guy's got four MVPs in 10 seasons. Talk about not appreciating him. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. And we're all talking about the decision and 5, 6, 7 championships. So what? So he made a little bit of a strategic kind of tactical PR error. But on the court, this guy is at worst, right?
At worst. This guy, man.
I mean, you know,
so
we
right
kept talking about
that.
elite players, and we kept talking about Larry Bird is the best small forward, you know, ever. But I tell you what, LeBron is just about past him, and it's all uphill.
I think he will pass him after
this
season.
He wins his fourth and if he wins his second championship, then, he's going to pass Bird and become the
especially
best
because
small
of
forward.
How he plays defense. His defense
and
is
one
dominating.
Of the top players of all time.
You know what's so fascinating about LeBron? He can really guard the 1, 2, 3, and 4. I mean, that's kind
of ridiculous.
And in
this day and age of weaker
some
centers,
right?
You know, except for Dwight Howard, he can probably go to 5, too.
definitely. So, rookie of the year, without a question, Damian Lillard. Now, this was my pick preseason. Yeah, I really do you realize he led the NBA in minutes as a rookie point guard for Portland? That's impressive. I mean, to me, Lillard is a stud. I think Portland has a bright future. Hopefully, you know, LaMarcus will be there and stay there. He's on a contract for a while. They'll probably get rid of J.J. Hickson and move some other pieces. You know, he needs some help. But I think with LaMarcus, Aldridge, and Lillard, and Miles, you know, Myers Leonard, they got a nice young nucleus. You know, they just re-signed Wes Matthews and Nicholas Batum. So let's see what they can add to this team. I think it needs to be in the front court, but Portland, to me, when you have a great point guard, which this is the era of the great point guard, I think they're on the right path, right?
Yeah, 19 points, 6.5 assists a game, 3 rebounds a game. I mean, Damian Lillard, hats off, and great for Portland to knock down that point guard selection, because everybody looks at him now and it's like, oh yeah, Dame Lillard, that's the man. But coming out of college, people were saying, Weaver State, what's that? You know, is that competition? Is that NBA level competition? And he's kind of a scoring point guard. But good for them. Love his game, and kudos to Dame for a great season. So let's move on. Coach of the year, who you got?
Coach of the year, we talked off air that we would both go with Denver Nuggets, George Karl, 57 games in the Western Conference. Where they only had 3 or 4 losses all season at home. He did it with players being injured. I like Eric Spoelstra also. I mean, 66 wins for the Miami Heat. I would, you know, it's a coin toss. I'd give it to either or. I think Mark Jackson, you know, would be up there, notable. Popovich, of course. The one thing about Spoelstra that I love, the Heat, you know, winning 66 games, only 12 teams in NBA history have done that. So that's pretty impressive. But I know you, you know, George Collins is your guy, and I got to agree with you. He's a Tar Heel.
Yeah, with that team and with the fact that we kept saying they don't have a star, and
yeah.
Danilo goes down at the end of the season, not for most of the season. But that team, if I told you that a team where your best players are Danilo Gallinari, JaVale McGee, Kenneth Fareed,
Ty Lawson,
Andre Miller, you know, you'd say, really?
Yeah.
57 wins?
AI, Andre Iguodala.
And Andre
yeah.
Iguodala, sorry. 57 wins in that loaded Western Conference to come in third, that's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive. I mean, that means that they had the third best record in the Western Conference and only the Miami Heat from the East. So they have the fourth best record in the league with that team right there. An unbelievable home record.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the West is so much better this year than the East. You know, I mean, it's not even, you know, a joke.
Right.
It is what it is. So let's keep it moving. Sixth man.
Man.
I think, you know, for a while it was Jamal Crawford, but I think in the last month it's been solidified, and a lot of reporters have been saying who they voted for. J.R. Smith is going to be our sixth man of the year, ladies and gentlemen, and he's the sixth man for Ray and Tay. An incredible season for J.R.
Yeah,
know, 18 really
points, 5.3 rebounds, 2.7 assists, and what a month of, you know, from mid-March to mid-April,
mm-hmm.
this guy has been unbelievable. Especially with Carmelo in and out of the lineup and Amari,
and no Amari.
Out of the
yeah.
lineup. Yeah, he's really stepped up, solidified himself as a bona fide, you know, scorer. And if he's more efficient these days, and he plays D, and he's grabbing
yeah.
rebounds. So, yeah, this
two
guy,
huge game-winning
Smith,
shots this season, too. Had two nice game winners. I saw one
he
live.
He could work on his salsa, though.
Incredible.
He could work on his salsa. He needs to talk to Victor Cruz, his boy from
yeah,
growing
Victor's
up in New
hook
Jersey
him up.
About his salsa. But no, J.R. Smith,
no.
sixth man of the year.
Definitely. Defensive player of the year, probably would have to go to Joakim Noah. I think you could also throw in Tony Allen, some say Hibbert, Marc Gasol. I'd toss up for me Tony Allen of Memphis, the guard. He's been guarding point guards, shooting guards. He locks people down for Memphis. And then Joakim Noah is just, he's had his best season ever as an NBA player for the Chicago Bulls. So, you know,
yeah,
I definitely 11 like.
11 rebounds, 2.1 blocks. Yeah, the big men have it a little bit easier because they're measurables, rebounds and blocks,
right?
Tony Allen's
right.
a wingman, and, you know, you get into the real esoteric stats like what field goal percentage you've held your opponents to. That's a little bit harder
right.
to get your hands
plus minus on the court and steals. It's more, you have to really have the stats to break it down, and that's why so many people are so high on Tony Allen and his game, you know. So let's talk about most improved. I mean, I think
most
it's kind of clear Paul George went from being a second or third best on the Pacers last year to now with Danny Granger being out, an all-star and leading the Pacers to the third best record. Incredible season for Paul George. Also, people like Larry Sanders and Nikolai Vucevic for Orlando Magic, who had a great season with a lot of double-doubles, and Sanders was incredible, especially defensively. You'd have to agree with Paul George, though, right?
Yeah, I would agree with Paul George. I love those other two, Sanders and Vucevic. But here's another guy to throw at you, and maybe most improved is not the right term for him, but
mm-hmm.
James Harden. Now,
yeah,
this
no,
might have just been
definitely.
A matter of getting playing time and becoming the man, but, you know,
yeah,
our
getting
most
more
improved
shot
Paul
attempts,
George
yeah.
goes from 12 points to 17 points, a game, 17-4, increases rebounds from 5.6 to 7.6, and increases his assists from 2.4 to 4.1. So very impressive. Gets himself an all-star appearance for Indiana, which he rightfully deserves, and he's
yeah.
the man. But let me tell you what James Harden did. James Harden went from 16-8 a game to 25-9. And he improved everything. His rebounding went from 4.1 to 4.9, and his assists went from 3.7 to 5.8 assists a game. And his minutes went from 31 to 38. So he's playing more minutes, and he becomes the man, but he really stepped into those shoes. So I don't know if that's technically qualified as most improved, because he went from being a borderline star to a legitimate star, as opposed to Paul George, who was a kind of a role player to an all-star. But James Harden, I mean, woo, what a difference between last season and this
season.
Well,
he definitely would be, and this is my sort of my next little thing before we get to the playoff preview real quick, all-NBA first team, because Harden would definitely be on the second team. But I'd say the first team, we probably have in the backcourt Chris Paul and Kobe. Obviously, the forwards would probably be LeBron and Durant. And, you know, it's hard to leave Melo off, but he's right there. Now, the question is, like the NBA All-Star weekend, they didn't do centers. So then maybe
you
have to put
forwards,
you would put in Melo. But if you got to do centers, you throw in Tim Duncan, right? With a great season for Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, Duncan, Gasol, I'm trying to think if probably Duncan first team, Gasol second team, and then Dwight Howard, even though he was banged up, third team, or Joakim Noah third team.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll see how the NBA does it. But I do believe they'll probably do the traditional for all NBA teams, not three forwards. I haven't heard any or read anywhere with.
No, I think you have to go traditional on that. Oh, I think you're having some technical difficulties again. Well, we'll continue with the NBA. We'll wrap up this Rante Awards, and then we'll move into the NBA playoffs. Woo! So the playoffs start on Saturday. We've got some great games and some great matchups in the NBA playoffs. So we start with Boston and New York on Saturday. We continue Chicago-Brooklyn on Saturday. We've got, sandwiched in between them, we've got Memphis at the Clippers, and then the late night game Memphis-Clippers, the late night game, and then Golden State at Denver is sandwiched in between those two Eastern Conference games. So, great game starting on Saturday, and you know, let's start to give you what Ray and Tay think on our predictions here. So let's start in the Eastern Conference. So in the Eastern Conference, we've got the 1-8 matchup is obviously Miami versus Milwaukee. And Miami's won 3 out of 4, but Brandon Jennings is talking a little smack. So Jennings is out there saying,
he's tough. So we'll see how that breaks down, but I got to go with the Heat sweeping them 4-0.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think the Heat also, they're just too tough. I don't even think in Milwaukee that the Bucks could take one game. So I like the Heat 4-0. So let's move on to the next series. So the 2-7 series, now this is interesting, especially given the history between the franchises and what's been going on now in Boston, which hopefully gets resolved, you know, today, hopefully in the next few hours, in fact. But the Celtics and the Knicks, when was the last time the Knicks were 2 seed and the Celtics were a 7 seed? So 2-7 matchup is the Knicks and the Celtics. A rivalry for years and years and years. Should be a great matchup. I think both teams will be very, very tough at home. I like the Knicks to win the series, but I could definitely see Boston picking up 2 games. I could see the Knicks going 6 games in this series. What do you think? We still have technical difficulties with Tay. Maybe there's another sandstorm happening out there in Arizona. But, we'll wait till we can hear him clearly. But so 2-7, we've got Knicks and Celtics. Now, 3-6, we've got Indiana and Atlanta. So this Atlanta Hawks team, nobody expected much of this team, and they were flirting with the 5 seed and the 6 seed. So finally they're the 6 seed. And the Indiana Pacers, everybody said, you know, they're big and they're built for the playoffs, and they could probably give Miami a run for the money, or they're one of the only teams that could give Miami a run for their money just because of the size on their roster. So, you know, I think Atlanta's a pretty tough team at home. They have some athletes. I think that Josh Smith, when he's on and isn't taking crazy shots, can give some, you know, can help them win a game or two. So I think that Indianapolis, because they can't score, I don't think they can blow you out. So they'll be in a lot of these games. So this series also, I predict, to be a 4-2 series. I think Indiana wins the series, but Atlanta might win two at home. Tate, can you hear
us? Can you hear me?
Yeah, barely. You're breaking up. You're in and out.
Okay. Well,
oh, you got the Pacers winning. We got that, barely. So let's continue.
Knicks winning. Knicks 4-2. Pacers 4-2. Miami 4-0.
Okay, so you got the Knicks 4-2, Pacers 4-2, Miami 4-0. And who's your fourth?
Brooklyn,
what do you have for Chicago, Brooklyn? You got
Brooklyn
winning. Okay. So it's funny because now they're saying that Noah might be out. And if he's out for the series, this series looks totally different. And Brooklyn may, in fact, win this series. And Tay predicts Brooklyn going 4-3. You know, it's funny because I had Brooklyn potentially challenging for the Eastern Conference Championship. I thought eventually they'd give Miami Heat some trouble. But I don't know. I still think, believe it or not, I still think Chicago can win this series. I think Chicago could win this series 4-3. I think ultimately their defense and Thibodeau, especially with a day off in between games, that they can certainly give Brooklyn all they can handle. And they were a terrible matchup for them all season. So if Noah goes down, the pendulum swings a little bit more towards Brooklyn, but I still think Chicago wins this series. I think they win it 4-3. So, you keep breaking up. We can't hear a word you're saying. Let's keep going to the Western Conference. We'll come back to this. We'll give you the second round later, but let's just focus on the first round. So in the Western Conference, let's go 1-8 matchup, and this could have easily been the 2-7 matchup, or this Houston team could have easily been the 6 seed, but a little disappointing at the end for Houston, but the 1-8 matchup is Oklahoma City-Houston. So you have James Harden playing against the team that traded him, and we'll see if Oklahoma City gets challenged, probably not in this round, but later on what this team looks like with Kevin Martin instead of James Harden. But I think that Houston could possibly win a game. They could win a game at home. I think that Oklahoma City, however, is too tough. I think that OKC wins 4-1. I think that ultimately the talent, the youth, the perimeter players, the matchups, specifically with Russell Westbrook, I just think that Harden and James and Linsanity, Jeremy Lin, I think Harden will just get him in foul trouble. They're going to have a hard time guarding him, and can KD. I think that the Kevin Durant-Chandler Parsons matchup is too much. So I like Oklahoma City in this one, 4-1. Moving to the next game, who do you have on this? Do you have OKC sweeping them, or you got them winning 4-1, 4-2? 4-1. All right, so Tay's got 4-1 also. And then in that 2-7 matchup, you got San Antonio against the Lakers. Now, some people think the Lakers have a chance to win. Look, at the end of the day, they still don't have Kobe Bryant. So any team that doesn't have Kobe, I'm still not so excited about, especially because Steve Nash is not – even if he plays, he'll probably be a little bit out of sync, a little bit rusty. And Steve Blake's been playing out of his mind last few games. But I think that if you give Popovich the time before the series and the time in between games – plus San Antonio is pretty tough at home, I think San Antonio wins this series 4-2. I know some people are expecting the Lakers to put up a good show, and I think winning two games for a seven seed and a team that's been up and down is actually not bad. You know, it's not up to Lakers standards for, you know, the past 30 years, 40 years, but I do believe that San Antonio wins this game, and ultimately they have the ability to move on. And if San Antonio were to win, they'd play the winner of this series. So the 3-6 series is going to be very interesting because you've got Golden State and Denver, two up-and-down teams, two teams that play with a lot of tempo. And historically, that doesn't work in the playoffs. Now, the good thing is they get to play each other. So obviously one of these teams with their tempo will win. And so you got to think Golden State is prime to go into this series and maybe knock off Denver, especially given that Gallinari is out. And so one of their big weapons, and of course Denver doesn't have a single go-to guy. So the question is, who's Denver's guy when they need a basket? Now, we always thought that would be Gallinari until he got hurt. So is that Iguodala? Is that Ty Lawson? And Kenneth Faried is in a boot. So Denver's in tough situation in the first round with Golden State. Now, I think ultimately Denver's going to win. I think they'll win 4-3, but I think this will be a heck of a series. And Ray, yeah, well, you're breaking up a little bit. Okay, so now, I got Tay's picks here. So Tay, all right, so I had Oklahoma City 4-1. Tay has Oklahoma City winning also 4-1. San Antonio, he has San Antonio beating the Lakers 4-3. I've got the San Antonio Spurs beating the Lakers 4-2. The next series, Denver-Golden State, he's got the Golden State Warriors winning 4-3, and I've got Denver in that series. We can hear you a little bit. Say, what do you got to say? No, you keep going in and out. So I'll keep going. I got his picks here, though. The show goes on, so I've got Tay's picks. He emailed them to me. So we've got Denver over Golden State 4-3 for Ray, and Golden State beating Denver for Tay. And then finally, in maybe the most intriguing matchups potentially of the whole playoffs, you've got the L.A. Clippers against the Memphis Grizzlies. So these two teams are really could have been 4-5 either way. The Memphis team, we loved their front court until they traded Rudy Gay. And the Oklahoma City, I think that Chris Paul in this series is just too much. He's the deciding factor. And I think the difference between Chris Paul and Mike Conley gives the Clippers a huge advantage. And I think that the front court of the Clippers will be embarrassed from last year's sweep at the hands of the San Antonio Spurs in the second round. And I think that the Clippers ultimately prevail over Memphis. I've got the Clippers winning 4-2. Tay's got the Clippers winning 4-3. So we'll see. The only difference between Ray and Tay, it looks like, is the Denver-Golden State Warriors. I've got Denver winning despite Gallinari going down and Faried being in the boot, and Tay's got Golden State winning a tough series 4-3. And in fact, the only series that we have going 4-3 is Denver-Golden State and potentially Brooklyn-Chicago. The rest, we look like we both agree, are 4-2. So we actually have two differences. I picked Chicago over Brooklyn, and Tay picks Brooklyn over Chicago, and I predicted Denver beating Golden State, and Tay does Golden State over Denver. So these are our first-round picks. We'll definitely get to more picks as the playoffs progress. We'll give you our predictions all the way through the championship. Maybe we'll do it on Monday just to give you a little bit more feel for what we think is going to happen in the NBA playoffs. So been a great episode. We loved having you with us. Keep up the emails. We still have some emails. In fact, I've got some backlog right here. Really quickly, actually, let me shout this email out. We've got Andy from Flushing asking, is Matt Harvey going to beat Steven Strasburg tonight? And secondly, where does Harvey rank among Mets greats? So I think it's too soon to say where he ranks among amongst greats, but I don't know. I think Steven Strasburg wins tonight. I think that Steven Strasburg is only 1-2. Matt Harvey's is 3-0 with a .82 ERA, but I think he gets hit a little bit tonight. I think he loses his game. I think Steven Strasburg and the Nats beat the Mets, and Matt Harvey gets his first loss of the season. But he does have some stuff, and between he and Zach Wheeler, the Mets have a nice little pitching staff to look forward to. So when they turn over this current staff and Johan Santana moves on, I like that young rotation of Wheeler and Harvey, and they probably have many good years ahead of them. So it's been great. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Ray and Tay today. We love talking sports with friends, so keep it up. And we'll look for you next time on Monday doing our NBA. We'll talk some more NBA playoffs. We got a lot of football, baseball. So have a great weekend. Ray and Tay, we're out.
Here we are.
The military-industrial complex has taken over the country along with the Wall Street gang.
If you look also at the people that Obama has put on his appointments list, it's all Wall Street, government of Wall Street, by Wall Street, and for Wall Street. There's nobody from heavy industry. There's nobody from the auto sector. Nobody from Silicon Valley. Nobody from big oil. Nobody from defense. No labor. No women. No retirees. No small business. Nothing. It's pure Wall Street. The only people who have a voice in Obama's council are Wall Street finance oligarchs.
T-I-M-E.